Welcome to the Fishing Daily Podcast with me, Oliver McBride. Today I'm joined by Sheila Keith from the Shetland Fishermen's Association. Welcome, Sheila.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for joining, Sheila. The Shetland Fishermen's Association has quite a diverse family of fishing vessels. What's the current makeup of your membership?
We have 115 vessels in our membership, made up from the pelagic, 8 pelagic vessels, 23 whitefish vessels, and the remainder comes from the inshore vessels, which are catching shellfish and finfish in our inshore waters. We count it a privilege to be representatives of an industry that has been very prominent in the economy of our islands for centuries and will be for the future if we manage them well.
Shetland seems to have a great ability to bring along young skippers and fishermen into the industry, and we're still seeing this happening today. What's the secret to it, and can other parts of Scotland and the UK learn from this?
Yes, a main part of our secret is probably our geography and the part that we're an island community, and that fishing has always been part of our culture. It's not hidden away. It's there. People can see the fishing vessels in our economy. It's worth £138 million every year to our economy, and more through the ancillary services. So all of that's vital. Fishing and the maritime services in Shetland is important. There's over 500 fishermen, and less than 4% of fishermen in Shetland are not resident in Shetland. They don't live here, which is something bucking the trend of what's seen elsewhere. I guess the secret to that is collaboration and cooperation between fishing vessels, older fishermen bringing younger ones on, being philanthropic in doing that. The symbiotic relationship between whitefish, pelagic and the inshore fleet as well. And the work that's done within organisations such as the Shetland Fishermen's Trust, the local council, in providing commercial finance to enable that to happen. It's all very vital. And also, it's a successful industry. It's not dying out here. If anything, it's growing.
What would the average age now of the fishermen in Shetlands be?
We recently did a calculation of people that are on our life insurance, and the average was 38, which includes that's across pelagic whitefish and the inshore, which is definitely bucking the trend. You don't find that elsewhere. We've had, since last November, we've had 14 under 30-year-olds join the fleet as shareholders. So that's them investing their own money and becoming owners of the fishing vessels, which, again, we're not seeing elsewhere. And that's vital to see success for the future. Fishermen have worked in the waters around Shetland for generations. They're custodians of the waters, of the stocks, to fishing sustainably for that next generation. And that works really, really well, and that aids the environmental aspects of the fishing fleet too, because they're not just here for the here and now, they're here for the future, for this next generation coming on of people within their community.
We're seeing a barrage from these environmental, non-governmental organisations, and they're knocking on the door of the popular press, and they're shaking hands with the politicians. And they're saying that there's overfishing and bottom trawling's bad, but we've got a lot of young people coming into the industry, and they're very self-conscious about the impacts that they're having. Not saying that the older generation wasn't self-aware, but maybe it was just the fact that the technology and the science wasn't there at the time. But we're seeing these NGOs, and they're thrashing the industry. Doesn't make the industry very attractive for other young people and other places to come into the industry, because it's seen as a dirty industry now. Some of these NGOs are saying that there's fish stocks being damaged and everything else, but yet in all, science from the ICS this year has given an increase of cod in the North Sea by 63% from last year. What does that mean to you and your members?
It means everything, because that cod cut last year has really put a lot of pressure on our members this year and able to make a financial return. It's like a farmer being told you can only plough 50% of your field. It's a huge impact on them and their ability to catch in waters which are showing that the caudate were there, which was the crazy thing about that, which has led us all to believe, and potentially ISIS to even believe, that they made a mistake, from them to go from a major cut to recommending increases this year between 44% and 64%. It's just ringing alarm bells that there was an error somewhere in that science. And our fishermen can't live with science that is inaccurate. But that isn't helping when science causes a major cut. It helps to fuel this fire of this nonsense that's coming out of the mouths of NGOs that don't have any facts to back up anything they're saying. I mean, we've put a press release out today that shows that the key commercial fish stocks are higher than they've been for decades, especially in haddock and cod. Many of the environmentalist lobbyists claim that they're under threat, but the reality is that the biomass for haddock is larger than it's been since 1972, and for cod since 1998. And if the environmentalists saying that we're irresponsible, we're damaging the bottom sea, and all of these things, that it just seems to be nothing is factually based on what they're saying, but people are listening to that. And that's the most concerning, is that our fishermen are responsible. They are doing things sustainably. They want to be custodians of the sea for the next generation.
As you said, like, they are the custodians of the sea. You think maybe that a lot of these NGOs are not really trying to engage with the fishing industry to understand what the fishing industry is doing?
They put this plethora of information, but they're not willing to hear facts or hear our side of it. We're constantly being attacked for our the fact of our inshore waters here. We have what's called the Shetland Shellfish Management Organization, which is a very prominent, it's the apple of the eye of many, where we control our waters out to 6 miles. We've got MSC for many of those inshore stocks. But yet we have these environmental groups continuing to attack that. And less than 4% of our inshore waters are fished for scallops, for instance. But they just come with this rhetoric that says that because you have an MSC accredited scallop fishery, you are ruining the seabed and you're causing devastation. Well, that damage was probably done decades ago. They're fishing the same grounds, but they're not interested in it. It's costing us thousands of pounds to argue against that we're being sustainable and responsible when you've got accreditations even to prove it. It just doesn't seem proper or right or fair that these NGOs can attack the industry. The SSMO example is a prime one, but this cod and bottom trawling and all of this, we're continuing to spend a lot of time and a lot of money fighting that and raising the PR of fishermen. But to what ends if they're not interested in listening in the first place anyway? If they've got an anti-fishing mentality, they're never going to be convinced of reality.
So, yeah, what you're saying brings us to the fact is that Shetland fishermen have been showing that they've been very responsible for the waters around their islands now for a long time. And they've been at the forefront of raising issues concerning gill netting and longlining. And you've brought that to the Scottish Government, and you're looking forward to a consultation on this. Where is that at the moment?
That's right. Our fishermen have been acutely concerned by the number of gill nets and longline vessels in our area, which is pushing them off of their traditional fishing grounds, with several kilometres of nets taken up. Areas that means they can't move into grounds that are very valuable, especially when you're trying to move off of other grounds that cod may have been on when the quotas were short. And it's adding to the plastic pollution in our oceans as well. As you've already acknowledged, there's photographs and evidence of our fishermen getting tangled in these discarded nets. And the reason you know they're discarded is they're bundled up in such a way with a rock in the middle of them that shows that they're deliberately being thrown over the side with the aim of it sinking to the bottom, which is causing safety issues for our vessels. And that's all been prominent in the press too. But we just want our government now to take full control of this issue. It's within their remit, and the lack of political will is so frustrating for our members. We want the pollution of our marine environment to be taken seriously, and just call for government to listen to the views that we've raised in this consultation and actually act soon. This has been ongoing for a decade now. Gillnets has been on our agendas at meetings, and that's absolutely diabolical to be in that situation, especially when this is something that the Greens have linked with Shetland Fishermen's Association on, to say that actually something needs to be done by our government to stop this. And it may well be a good fishing method in other fishing areas, but certainly not in the mixed fishery areas around Shetland too. They're questionable about their ethics of fishing.
Yeah, there seem to be a few instances where Shetland boats had come across gillnetters who were saying that they were defending their territory, but at the same time they were acting in a very callous manner which could endanger other vessels.
That's right. I mean, there was a good example of our chairman's vessel, the Alison Kay, where they were trying to deliberately fill his propeller with a rope, which could have brought the vessel to standstill in rough waters, which would have been led to circumstances you really wouldn't want to consider. And there's many other examples of that happening too. But it happens, but nothing can be done about it, apparently, by our government. And this is where time is enough to do this. The damage in the environment, the damage to our fish stocks, which also already I've explained that our community relies on in waters around these islands, time is now of the essence to make act and make something happen.
What do you think would be the solution? Do you think gill netting and long lining and trawling can coexist together?
I think that in Norway they have good examples of fishing management measures that you can put on, soak times, for instance, depths that you can lay these types of fishing method, the nets on. There's other things we have in the past. Our members have called for a ban. I think we need to be careful of calling for bans of things because you never know what you might want to do in the future. But I can understand the frustration in asking for that, because industrial fishing of this level is devastation to the ecosystem if it's not managed appropriately. And that's what we're asking for in this consultation, is proper management measures on this fishery. We have to abide by many rules. For example, 6% of our catches must be landed and reviewed for grading and measuring purposes on our fish markets. We question whether that is actually happening for all of these landings, because they don't have the staff to do it in the ports that they're landing these fish into. So all of that must, just so we can see proportionate management measures across all fisheries as well, is we need to see better evidence of proportionality of measures in that. So
we're now in the middle of the annual negotiations between Norway and EU and the UK. What are you hoping for that could be achieved in these negotiations for this next year?
Yeah, there's a number of negotiations on at the moment. As an independent coastal state, it means there's a lot more negotiations. Our expert negotiator, Simon Collins, who's been at this for years, is currently in Brussels at the trilateral with the UK, Norway and EU. And then at the same time, then there's the bilaterals that are going on with UK, EU, UK, Norway, UK and Faroe. So it's complex. But what we really want to see is that what our fishermen are seeing on the fishing grounds are replicated in the quotas they can get for next year. We've had so many years now of cut when the stocks are seen to be very, very healthy in our waters. We really hope that we're able to say to our fishermen at the end of the year that it's an improvement in the state at which the IC science is saying that, so I just hope in the negotiations that IC science comes through and that we have better situation and more fishing opportunity for next year. The stocks of Shetland's key commercial species, especially cod and haddock, are the highest they've been in the land for the decades, according to the latest IC science. That's not me saying it, that's not our fishermen saying it. ICES is saying that themselves. And we're delighted to see that, but let's see that in quotas for our fishermen for next year.
Yes, that's a huge recognition that we called that these stocks are strong because, as you said earlier on and just there now, the industry has been seeing a lot of cuts. But on top of a lot of cuts, we've had a few years now where things have been really not that great. We've had COVID, and once we just got over COVID, now we're into what you call, well, we had Brexit as well. But now we're looking at a fuel crisis, and you know, it's affecting fishermen everywhere. How is it affecting the boats in Scotland and Shetlands?
It's probably even more prevalent here because our fuel prices are higher before you even begin, because we live in an island community. It takes it seems ironic that we have the largest oil terminal in Europe on our doorstep, and but our fuel prices are so high. We've seen fuel up to £1 per litre, for example, for our fishing boats, which just makes it not economical to go to sea. We've seen fishing boats tie up at periods of times throughout this year when normally they'd be out prosecuting fish. But hopefully, we're hoping that they will come down. It's particularly a difficult time for these young crews that I mentioned earlier that started out with bank loans to pay for at a time when the quotas were down. It's just a perfect storm of negativity for any young fisherman, which I'm hoping that they can be resilient enough to work through this difficult times. Fuel is just catastrophic to be high at this time when you're trying to avoid certain species and you're having to avoid like cod that you're finding on fishing grounds and examples like that, and having to negotiate other vessels that are in our area too. So let's hope that prices will fall, fishing opportunity will go up, prices will remain high, and our fishermen at last can breathe a sigh of relief and find that they can sleep better at night.
Which do you think would work better for fishermen in terms of fuel costs? Would a fuel cap be better, or would a fuel subsidy work better?
See, our government would argue we already have a fuel subsidy in terms of the relief aid that they get on the diesel at the moment, and therefore they have never been willing to shift and give you more of a subsidy. So I can't think that they're going to change that story. If anything, in the budget announcement in the last few days, there's a concern there that they're going to remove that relief and it'll be fully worse for our fishermen. Now, that is just, it's a concern. It's not near reality, I don't believe, at this point in time. But if that was the case, our fishermen are really stuck in a very difficult place. I'm not sure governments are interested in doing anything for fishermen, because they'll then have to do it for transport companies, for airlines, for farming, for everything. And I think it's just too difficult for them to do, and I have no confidence that they will. I would love to be able to tell our fishermen that we feel we're getting somewhere with government, but we feel like we're hitting our heads off a brick wall when it comes to fuel.
I suppose another area as well now that fishermen, especially around the Shetlands, is feeling the spatial squeeze. That report from the SFF and the NFFO paints a very bleak picture, and every couple of weeks now we're looking at the Crown Estates announcing a new offshore wind farm development. Fishing industry seems to have very little involvement in it. Have you been consulted on anything that's happening?
I think we feel left out. I think we've had good examples of good cooperation in the past in our waters around Shetland with oil and gas in the 1970s. I wasn't here. Thankfully, I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to see the effects of that and the good cooperation with oil and gas, and disappointed that the lessons learned then are not being replicated in oil and gas. We're finding that the areas that have been set aside for development seems to be the worst areas, because it seems to be the data they use to identify these areas where they're outdated, didn't exist, or perhaps they didn't even care. I don't know. Our fishermen certainly feel the latter to be more the case, that is the government going to be honest and say that fishing is going to be the collateral damage of green energy, which would be devastating, actually, because we are producers of green food, low carbon food. We need food, we need energy security, we need food security. The government here in Scotland especially can have a serious win-win scenario here. And I'm really hoping that in some of the noise that we're making around the impacts potentially on spawning areas by noise, disruption, by pushing fishermen off of traditional grounds, abundant areas, the electric magnetic fields. I'm hoping some of the noise we're making will let them change things before it's too late, because these developments are a few years off. They're not happening here. Our waters in particular around Shetland are very inhospitable. We are limited in our workforce. We definitely, I mean, we're not naive fishermen that we don't want to see some of the work. If this is going to happen in the waters around Shetland, we don't want it damaging our fishery, but we definitely want some of the contracts coming to our local community. So there has to be a win-win for our islands in this. But if we end up with green energy and a devastated fishing industry that is, it's seen to be pushed off its grounds, spawning grounds have been damaged, electric magnetic fields are causing inshore fisheries to behave in an unnatural way, that will be so more than disappointing. It will be devastating. And somebody will have to be held to account for that, because if you proceed knowing the risks, it's one thing doing something and getting unintended consequences. But if the government know all of these risks, we've highlighted it to them, we've done that in writing, then it's irresponsible to proceed. By their own admission, the Scottish government says there's huge data gaps in when it comes to wind farms. So stop, take note, let technology develop a bit. The supply chain for Scotland can't handle this level of development too. Let's do it in a more proportionate, more lengthy timeframe for development. Because this is not actually going to provide cheap energy either, with the costs that are incurred if you try to do it speedily.
Well, I couldn't put it better myself. I'm a great advocate for patience and learning a lot more about the science of what's going to happen with offshore wind farms, because you're not talking about installation alone of the wind farm. You're talking about submarine cables. You're talking about a lot of different issues that we really have no idea what the consequences will be in 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line, especially for all marine life, not just for fish, because we're all concerned that the environment out there at sea stays pretty good, because it's such a great thing to have.
It is, and especially for an island community when you didn't have huge alternatives to. Shetland is the last remaining indigenous sector that is adding so much into the economy when we have smaller indigenous industries, but fishing is growing rather than declining in Shetland, and there's huge opportunities in fish processing in the islands, especially in pelagics, and that's what we want to see. And anything that damages that future through ecosystem damage, you can't get that back. Once it's gone, it's gone. So just hesitate, take caution. I mean, we have precautionary principle the whole time when it comes to fisheries management. Oh, we don't quite know what the science says. Let's put in precautionary principle. Where's precautionary principle when it comes to green energy or putting something in depths of water that's never been done before? Fishermen say it's difficult. It's going to be seriously difficult to do it in the very rough waters around their islands too. So stop. What actually makes economic sense too? Does it make economic sense to develop these things in near an island community of 22,000 or near a population of millions down on the mainland? That's a big question for us, is why are we being the payers of the damage that could be caused when actually it's going to be to the benefit of people in other countries, such as maybe China or whatever, that are going to make the money from this, because it's not locally owned businesses that's going to benefit.
Well, unfortunately, for people living in rural areas and for fishing, I always found that it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. You know, as long as they don't have to see it or experience it, then it's not going to bother them. But that's the challenge of being in the industry. And speaking of challenges, we're not too far away now from 2023, even though we don't want to say 2022 is finished yet. Hopefully, there's a few more things to happen.
Still a quota to catch. It's not over yet.
Not over yet. But what do you see as the challenges for the Shetland fishermen in 2023?
I actually hope there's a lot less challenges in 2023 than we've seen in 2022, because it's not been a very good year.
We've had lower quotas, we've had challenges with fuel, we've had still issues with NGOs creating havoc and saying they were a responsible industry. I'd like to think that some of the things we've put into place in 2022, for example, the recent COD workshop that we had with ICES and fishermen, that brought together fishermen, fisheries representatives, scientists from all areas that are interested in Northeast COD. So you had people from Norway, from Denmark, we're all in the same room speaking to ICES about COD. I think that there's huge opportunities in that, in the development of sense checking ICES science before it gets to the stage where it's advice. I think there's huge opportunities for better collaboration with industry and scientists and the government. Government's resources are being stretched ever more. I think why do we not start looking at fishing boats as being data gatherers and scientific research vessels, for instance? It happens in our pelagic fleet at the moment, there's a lot of self-sampling. So I think we'd love to see better cooperation between scientists and fishermen in 2023, because it's needed, because we really feel that the best science that they're using at the moment isn't, we're struggling to see it as the best science. So let us add into that level of data that is used. So I think there's huge opportunities coming ahead and hopefully a lot less challenges.
Well, Sheila, thank you for joining us, and it's been a pleasure speaking to you and finding out what's happening in the Shetland Islands, and hopefully we'll have you on again and we'll find out more what's happening.
Once we have the end of negotiations, there'll be a lot more good news to say.